You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Yes, hello, welcome along to the William Hill Boxing Podcast with Steve Bunce. We're looking ahead to the best of this weekend's action. We're going to look at Anthony Crawler against Ricky Burns in Manchester. We're going to look ahead to Chris Eubank Jr.'s fight against Avni Yildirim for the quarterfinal of the World Boxing Super Series in Stuttgart. And Steve Bunce is on the line now. How are you, Buncey?
Never been better. What a busy weekend. And it's really odd because it's kind of low-key, but it's incredibly busy. It's a strange one.
Yeah, there's no like mega title fights or anything this week, but plenty of interesting fights along the way. We'll get stuck into those in a moment, Buncey, but a bit of news as well before we get into the action this weekend. And we'll start with Tyson Fury. It's not often that he's out of the boxing headlines, and he's catching people's imagination in the news once again. This time it's that he won't be applying for his licence with the British Boxing Board of Control. Talk of him possibly trying through the Irish route, but they're saying that that's unlikely. Do you think we'll ever see him in a boxing ring again?
Yeah, I do. I think we'll see him in a boxing ring again. I think he's got the flavour. I think he knows that he's a warm-up fight and a licence from somewhere away from securing a 10, 15 or even £20 million payday with Anthony Joshua at some point next year. He's got to lose 4 stone. He's got to get in front of someone and ask for his licence back. He could get a Luxembourg licence. He could get an Irish licence if he was clever enough. He'll get a British licence, for God's sake. You know, I still think this latest comment is a little bit of a throwaway remark. And by the way, I'm not going to apply for a British Boxing Board of Control licence. I think he'll get a British licence. I think he'll apply for one. It's a bit of a smokescreen. Yeah, I do think we'll see him back. I do.
Yeah, it's to do with his...
The money's too big. The money's too big, Mark. It's that simple. I mean, let's be honest, you know?
Yeah. I mean, we've seen it in the past, haven't we? It was David Haye against Derek Chisora. They both had Luxembourg licences to fight.
And listen, you can get a Luxembourg licence. I'll tell you what, I'll meet you in half an hour and I'll give you your Luxembourg licence. That kind of thing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Fair enough. Okay, so we'll see how that pans out. I want to talk to you as well about Tony Bellew, David Haye, Mark II. Obviously, the first fight was interesting, pretty exciting as well. People wouldn't have given Bellew as much chance as any chance really going into the fight, and he beat David Haye on that occasion. William Hill sponsoring the second meeting between the two, and we're looking forward to it in December. You looking forward to the fight?
I am too. Listen, I was desperate for the first one, and I argued till I was blue in the face and said that all the hate before the fight was genuine and they would still hate each other at the end. And people said, but they cuddled each other. Of course they did. It was a desperate fight. One man, Achilles went, and the other got to take some terrible punishment. It was a cracking fight. It was a brilliant fight. A bizarre ending, obviously, with the injury. I think they hate each other more now than they did then. It's because they both left that fight in a bizarre way with question marks next to their name. So the thing with David Haye, two question marks were, if he hadn't have injured his foot, he'd already won 5 rounds. Would he have won the fight? Haye says yes. Bellew says no. So that's a question mark over Bellew, because it looks like Bellew only won because Haye was injured. And the second one is, well, just before the injury, Haye was starting to look tired and therefore he would have gassed and Bellew would have stopped him. Haye says that's ridiculous. Bellew says that's exactly what the plan was. So there's more questions than answers. And basically, even though Bellew came out with a victory, he beat a one-legged man and it took him 6 rounds and he lost a couple of those rounds according to the scorecards. So Bellew's not happy. Haye's not happy. And they're doing it again. What they're doing this time, though, is they're trying to be a little bit more restrained. Because if you look at the press conference the other day, there was more anger, genuine anger there, without them having to swear and throw punches at each other, than there was in all of the screaming, shouting, pushing, slapping and shoving that existed in the first fight. Trust me, this was a great fight first time, it's a better fight second time, and there's as much anger. And I'm going to stick with my first prediction, David Haye to win now.
Yeah, there's not been as much bravado with the anger, if you like. There's no punches thrown, there's no shouting and screaming at each other. But the things that they're saying, David Haye saying that he felt Bellew robbed him, comparing him to a bank robber.
Bellew's, great expression.
Yeah, Bellew's mocked David Haye's act, in inverted commas there. The things that they're saying are getting to each other a little bit more this time around, I feel.
Well, I think they are, because what it is, I think Bellew suggested it was a fake injury and that the pictures of the scar and all of the casts were all sort of fake. When we get into a depth of deception here that is bordering on espionage, for God's sake. So, you know, that's not the case. David Haye's Achilles went, fact. David Haye fought 5.5 rounds with a ruptured Achilles, fact. David Haye shouldn't have been able to fight 5.5 rounds with a ruptured Achilles, fact. And Tony Bellew lost a couple of those rounds, fact. But what we don't know is what would have happened if it hadn't gone. And this is why, I'm not joking. Bellew's as angry. He's angry. He's angry, Bellew. Because he feels that he did exactly what he said he would do. And people are going, oh, yes, Tony, but you wouldn't have done that if his Achilles hadn't gone. Now, Bellew can't prove he would have. And the people that are doubting him can't prove that he wouldn't have. It's set up perfectly. Trust me, there's enough animosity. You can see it in their faces. You don't have to be throwing punches. But when someone's throwing a punch, if you ever see a video of people having a fight, you can't see their face. When they're face-to-face or eyeing each other like they were yesterday or in London at the press conference, you could see that hate. It was genuine. It was real. This is a good fight.
Yeah, that answers the next question I was going to ask, really. David Haye wants this fight for revenge. Why did Tony Bellew want this fight? Why did he go into it prove a point? Well, is it just pound nuts?
You know, bizarrely, Tony Bellew wants it for a bit of revenge as well. He wants to put David Haye out of business. He wants to do it once and for all. So that's kind of genuine. He means it. You know, he's going to close the shop. He's going to finish this out. It's all going to be done. Done and dusted, so to speak.
Fair enough. By the way, the match, the bout betting for that, Tony Bellew 9-4. The draw is 28-1, and David Haye odds on at 4-11 for Bellew Haye 2, which takes place on the 17th of December.
Which is a Sunday.
It is, yeah. That's a bit weird, isn't it?
Bizarrely, yeah.
Yeah. Something to do with the getting the arena, I suppose, isn't it? But
yeah, I mean, they probably had a boy band there the night before.
Maybe it's a new thing, Sunday night boxing. Maybe it'll kick off for me.
There's no reason why it couldn't. No reason why it can't work.
I want to talk to you about the potential rematch between GGG and Canelo as well, ordered by the WBC after the controversial draw in the first meeting between the two. It should be great to see that as well, shouldn't it?
Yeah, that's a definite happening fight. And both of them feel they can do better next time around. Both of them claiming they felt they won. I thought Golovkin nicked it, but I thought Canelo would win. One judge gave 10 of the 12 rounds, quite famously, to Canelo. That's what makes it controversial. The draw was about right, I suppose, in some ways, but it was just that one score that ruined it for everybody. I'm glad they're doing it again. They'll do it in May of next year, so as close to the 5th of May, whatever that Saturday is, the 5th of May, that's when they'll do it, back in Las Vegas. And it will be an extremely, extremely unforgettable night.
Yeah, absolutely huge. Looking forward to that. Next year, let's talk about this weekend's action, though, Bunty. We're going to start with Anthony Crawler against Ricky Burns. Before we do, just anything on the undercards that's caught your eye before we get stuck into these?
Sam Eggington is defending his European title. That's quite interesting. And Conor Benn, a fighter who's about 8 or 9 unbeaten at the moment. No one really knows if he's a proper chip off the old block being Nigel Benn, or if he's just a guy that's been carefully matched. I would imagine in the next 6 months to a year, we'll find out. He's done nothing wrong, the kid. He's only a baby. So Conor Benn on the undercard. And people, you know, he attracts a bit of attention. I mean, there's about 850 boxers in the country at the moment. And Conor Benn, with his 8 fights, is probably in the top 20 of people's awareness. So having a big name does help.
Yeah, we'll probably have more on that in a moment or two when we move on to the Eubank Jr. fight. But let's start with Anthony Crawler against Ricky Burns, the meeting of two former lightweight world champions in Manchester. Talk about the loser looking at retirement and the winner going on to, hopefully once again for them, get another title belt. Anthony Crawler is 2-5 in the market in front of his home crowd. The draw 20-1. Ricky Burns is 2-1. Do you think it is that big? Is it a case of the loser's going to be looking down the barrel of retirement here?
I think it's not a case of looking down a barrel of retirement, but what comes sometimes when you lose a fight like this, a crossroads fight, is that the next fight, you don't get paid very much unless you're thrown in somewhere. So your bargaining power massively decreases. The loser of this fight, if he wants to be in a fight where he's favoured to win, will be paid peanuts. If he wants to be thrown in over his head as a replacement in a world title fight overseas, and he can make a few quid to go and lose. Neither of these two guys deserve that. It's a tight fight. It's a hard fight. A really tight fight. A really hard fight. A draw wouldn't surprise me. I think both of them have lost a little bit of what they had at their optimum weights, lightweight and probably super feather. Lightweight, super feather for Burns. It's a really, really difficult fight. They're not old, really, 34 Burns, 30 Crawler. But they've had 6 or 7 years of championship fights. Burns himself has 13 world title fights since winning the world title one weight in 2010. And Crawler won the British lightweight title in 2011. And since then, he's lost 4, drawn 3, and won 11. I mean, these guys are not protected species. They're hard guys that have been in hard fights. And I think they know an awful lot. And on Saturday, I'll be surprised if it's a stoppage win for either of them. I think it's points. I just fancy Burns, but I'm liking the draw here. What's the draw looking at, Mark?
The draw's a big price, 20-1.
I think that's a really good bet. They both like 12 rounds. They both go 12 rounds an awful lot. I don't think either of them has the power to really hurt the other guy. I think they've both been in with bigger bangers and survived 12. Last time out, Ricky Burns fought a guy called Ndongo. He lost, but the guy's lethal. Ricky went to 12. And the last two times out, Crawler was in with a guy called Jorge Linares, a dangerous banger. And he may have been a bit hurt, Crawler. One fight was tight, one fight wasn't tight, but they both went 12. So I don't think they stop each other. I think it goes tight. I think it goes close. Split decision, majority decision, draw. I'm fancying the draw, but if there is going to be a winner, I'm just fancying Burns could nick it. But the draw is the decision I like here.
Okay, 20-1 then for the draw. If you fancy Ricky Burns on points, that is 100-30. The traders are on to the fight going the distance, though. Yes, for the fight to go the distance is 4-11, and over 9.5 rounds is 100-30 on, so you're not going to get Rich backing those. Crawler's insisted that he's learned from the defeats to Linares. He feels that the experience has made him a better fighter. Could we still see more from Crawler? I mean, we kind of know what Ricky Burns is about. Is there still more scope from Crawler?
Well, it's a strange old thing now. I mean, this is his 41st fight, and he's been mucking around at a British, Commonwealth, European and world level now for about 6 or 7 years. Lots of hard fights. Plus, he had that assault, you know, when he had his skull fractured and broke his ankle when he was trying to apprehend a couple of house thieves, and they hit him over the head with a slab of concrete, knocked him out, but he didn't go down, as he points out. So, you know, he's a youngish 30, but he's been in some hard fights. I don't think we've got three great more years of Ant Crawler. He's got some unfinished business, perhaps, in Manchester, because the unbeaten WBO lightweight champion, a guy called Terry Flanagan, is from Manchester. In fact, they briefly went to the same secondary school, which is bizarre. That would be a fight that could still be made. And in all fairness, the way I'm looking at this fight, if it's tight and it goes 12, I'm seeing a rematch. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if these two had two, a minimum of two.
Yeah.
You know, they can make some good money. They've done about 12,000 in there, I think, tomorrow night. It's a good crowd. They can generate some good cash, and why not?
Yeah, why not? And we should see it go the distance then, in Bunce's opinion. The draw, a live player at a big price. In fact, if you do draw in the round betting, you get 22-1 rather than the 20-1 in the bout betting. So,
wow.
So go that way. Let's move on to the other fight that we're going to look at in detail. Chris Eubank Jr. against Avni Yildirim in the World Boxing Super Series in Stuttgart. It's the super middleweight quarter final. Apparently, Eubank Jr.'s IBO World Super Middleweight title is on the line as well here. And Eubank Jr. is priced up at 1-7. The draw is 33-1 and Yildirim is 9-2. Eubank Jr. with a professional record of 25 wins, 1 defeat and 19 knockouts. Yildirim is unbeaten, 16 wins, 16-0 he is, with 10 knockouts. Eubank Jr. is 1-7 in the betting, very hot, heavy favourite here really. But there has been a little bit of talk about this. Yildirim has been impressive in sparring sessions with James DeGale. Apparently he gave him all he can handle. Is it going to be tighter than perhaps the betting suggests there?
Absolutely. I mean, he's fought most of his, or a lot of his fights in Germany, Yildirim. He had that factor. Eubank Senior is not happy with the potential crowd or the potential security risks and breaches. Eubank Junior has only been in one hostile environment before, and he lost that fight to Billy Joe Saunders in 2014. It's a hard fight. It's a tight fight. Plus, the reports from the training sessions in December and early January this year from Miami, when Yildirim was sparring with James DeGale, are not just good. They're quite impressive. And the suggestion is it was him that bashed up James DeGale and knocked out the tooth that was then replaced, which then got knocked out. Indy Gale's title fight with Badu Jack a little bit later in the month. So this is a hard, tough fight. Saying that, in a championship contest, and in a real ring with small gloves and no head guards, and not the relaxed feeling that inevitably comes with sparring, Eubank has all the superior experience. So I just fancy Eubank. He just knows too much. He's too clever, and he's a terrific fighter, Eubank. And we concentrated too much on his father's mad antics. Like, for instance, his father often gets his own ring walk. His father has the silly shoes on and does all the stuff and has all the great sound bites. Chris Eubank Jr. does the fight, and he's a good fighter. If his name was Chris Johnson or Chris Jones, I assure you, this guy would have more respect than he gets. Somehow the name takes away from some of the respect. He's a good fighter. He's relatively young. He's developing into a really good fighter. Fancy a win here. I'm not sure he can get to Yildirim. From my understanding, is talking to people that have been around Yildirim, is exceptionally tough. But I'm fancying Eubank on points, and I'm fancying it to be quite clear, certainly over the last six rounds. So I'm going Eubank on points, tightest start of the fight, and he pulls away. He might even get to Yildirim late in the fight, but I'm fancying Eubank on points.
Okay, Eubank Jr. to win on points is 8-11. You mentioned the stuff with Eubank Sr. there. There's people talking about his fight against Graciano Rocchigiani.
Rocchigiani.
Back in 1994, and how he was the bad guy in that fight, kind of thing, and he stopped.
He was a bad guy.
Yeah, stopped his wedding, didn't he? Basically, effectively.
Yeah, it was a great story.
Yeah. He's trying to say that his son's going to be a warrior in there as well, and he's going to live up to all that. And does that put more pressure on Eubank Jr.?
No, not at all. It takes the pressure off because it's the dad saying, not the kid.
Yeah.
The kid's not saying, I'm going to go toe-to-toe with the toughest Turkish geezer ever. The kid's not saying anything. The dad can say what he likes, can wind up a man called Ahmet Oner, who is the promoter and manages Yildirim, and can upset the Germans by not showing up at a press conference, doing all the right things. The kid, you know, could be off in his room just listening to the music with his heartbeat really slow, really relaxed. It's his dad that's doing all the promising and all the ridiculousness. And on the night, you know, Eubank will hit him with a jab and he'll move away and the kid will miss by 3 foot and there's the pattern of the fight. That's what Eubank Sr. did. All this bold, crazy, lunatic talk that Eubank Sr. does about warrior and heart, he only did that when he had to in the Watson second fight and in the fights with Carl Thompson. The rest of the time, he won a round by throwing 3 jabs and then landing with a right and a left hook and a right cross in the last 3 seconds. That's how he won his fights. That's the truth. He was brilliant. He beat good fighters. And he coasted and he floated and he pushed it close once or twice and he could have lost the decision because he maybe didn't do enough. And the son does the same thing. If anything, you can accuse the son of mimicking his father in some ways. And that's the part of his boxing I don't like. I'd like to see Eubank Jr. a little bit busier for just a few more punches. But he's a clever boxer, Chris Eubank Jr. He doesn't get involved, doesn't get bashed up. He doesn't go toe-to-toe. He doesn't need to be a warrior. He does what he has to do. And I think he'll know too much for this kid. I think he'll start to make him miss, start to exploit him, and he might get to him late in the fight. But my favourite is he wins on points. And the dad takes all the pressure off the son with all of his lunatic prancing. It's brilliant. I love it.
Good stuff. Eubank Jr. on points, then 8-11. I've just knocked that together in a little double, a couple of doubles that we can play then on Saturday evening. Ricky Burns on points with that pace, 13-2. And if you fancy going ambitious and going for the draw in that one at 22-1 with Eubank Jr. on points, then you're talking almost 40-1. So,
blimey, 40-1 for what I would consider to be one nailed on and one that's, you know, not bad. That's good.
Okay, so
no great risk there. We're not saying it's a fourth round knockout or an eighth round knockout against the grain. Boy, oh boy, I like those two. That's not bad.
Nice. Good stuff, Bunty. Been a pleasure speaking to you once again. Good luck and enjoy it this weekend.
Thanks, Mark. Speak to you soon.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.